Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
No Sleepers.
Hello guys and welcome to another episode of Mostly Lit.
Hello.
How are you doing? How are you doing, Alex?
I'm good. Just trying to enjoy the most and the weather as it comes. Do you know what I mean? You don't know how long it's going to last in Britain.
Well, apparently it's going to be, I think it's like 3 weeks they said or something.
What, this heat?
Yeah, something like that.
Serious?
Something like
it's
that.
It's not even, depending where you come from, it's not even that hot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair.
I'll use it while I can. How's your week been?
It's been okay. It's been eventful. You know, yeah. Running up and down. I feel like I'm doing a lot at the moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Trying to do a lot of charity stuff, actually.
Okay.
You know, it's about time, actually. I've been meaning to do this kind of thing for ages, and it's just, yeah. I just haven't got around to it, but now I'm...
Can you talk about which charity stuff you want to do?
Obviously, Urban Synergy with the mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
Young boys, I've been doing that for a while. I might actually go and start volunteering in a couple of cancer research shops as well.
Right, okay.
Just
okay.
With the books and that.
Okay,
cool. Might be fun. But anyway, yeah, what about you?
You're putting it out there. I've not been doing much. Just been, you know, working on projects, stuff that I can't really talk about until for a few months now.
Oh, we got secrets now, yeah?
Yeah, secrets, man. But I just can't really, I gotta keep it contained until the time.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll tell you off air. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
But yeah, I'm working on those things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of stressing me out. But it's all good because all for a good cause in the end.
Well, before we get into too much of a discussion,
mm-hmm.
I want to introduce our special guest this week. Special guest, could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Ndaba Mandela, the chairman of the Africa Rising and the new author, which I've written a book called Going to the Mountain.
Yes, you heard right, people. Ndaba Mandela. Mandela. In the studio. With Mostly Lit, you heard right.
How are you doing anyway?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Enjoying this lovely weather here in Britain.
Mm.
And yeah, man, I'm just happy to be received so well and, you know, doing all the events and interviews.
Yeah.
It's really great to be received so well. So I'm happy. I'm happy to be here.
This weather is nothing like where you're from, though. At all, is it?
Well, right now, no, it's not, because right now in South Africa it's like 5 degrees Celsius.
Say what?
Oh, wow.
5 degrees Celsius.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's like freezing in South Africa right now.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I always envisaged South Africa just to always be warm.
That's the colonizer's mindset.
That's the colonizer's mindset. It's a deconstruct. Wow.
I saw you just recently did a show, like a live event as well. How did that go?
Yeah, you're talking about the one we did last night?
Yes, I saw some people tweeting about it.
Yeah, we were in Brighton, what's that place called? Rope Tackle, the Rope Tackle Arts Centre.
Okay.
They had an event out there for us. It was mostly the elderly who were in attendance.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of young people, which was always a pleasure for me because I wrote this book mainly for young people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Basically, you know, why I wrote this book is because we are celebrating 100 years of Nelson Mandela this year.
Yep.
If he was alive, we'd be celebrating his 100th birthday. But most of us, and people older, know the value of Nelson Mandela and the important example of leadership he set for the world. But the younger people, not so much. So I wanted the younger people to relate to Nelson Mandela as a grandfather, because we can all relate to having a grandparent,
yeah,
right? And to see him on his humanitarian side, not this huge figure, icon, revolutionary president, but as a granddad.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know? As a person.
And through that, you know, hopefully he will inspire them to reach out for the Nelson Mandela within all of us.
Amazing.
How do you see Nelson Mandela? Because obviously, you know, that's your grandfather, but you're obviously not immune to the way the media portrays him, the way culture portrays him. Have you ever looked at him as an idea and kind of forgotten that he is your grandfather?
Well, not really, because, you know, my parents never really talked about him much. Mm. The first time I heard about my grandfather was when my parents were telling me that we're going to go visit him in jail. And so I had a typical image of what jail was like, because I was only 7 years old at the time. And so we went. But when we got there, it was nothing like what I had imagined. It was a normal house, and a house that I think it was beautiful, much more better than that house. They had a swimming pool. I didn't have a swimming pool.
Yeah.
There were chefs who watched an Ever-Ending Story, which was like the main, you know, new latest release at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we met the man. He was tall, you know, warm, and engaged with all of us, and he was just happy to obviously meet most of us for the first time. And that was the first time I had an idea of what I wanted to do when I grew up. That day I told myself, when I grow up, I want to go to jail.
This is the house you said they used to try and break him, wasn't it?
Victor Vester.
Yes. Okay. So basically they kept him there by himself in isolation. And they were really involved in the negotiations, because they knew by then that they had to let him go, and they were working towards freedom and democracy, etc. Yeah. So they put him in this lovely house. He had chefs, he had all the luxuries that you would want, and tried to say, listen, Madiba, you're an old man now. You know, you should spend the rest of your days enjoying the time with your family.
Oh, they manipulated.
And we will protect you and provide, you know, that make sure that you're comfortable.
Yeah.
As long as you denounce the ANC and your comrades and denounce the whole political movement.
Yeah.
And of course, being Madiba, being the man that he is, he wouldn't have none of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how it went.
Okay. Was there like an element of fear when you went to see him? Because there's this big thing about grandparents, obviously, like if you're blessed or privileged enough to have them in your life at one time, they this revered presence in your house or in your family and whatnot. Was it like, what was the feeling of actually having to go? You were 7 years old,
yeah,
so
yeah,
going to visit your grandfather.
Yeah, I mean, I thought a lot about it, going there, you know, and meeting him. But when we met him, he was just such a jolly good fellow, you know. He was just happy and smiley, and so he, you know, he just made us feel comfortable and easy. And for me, at that stage, I was more fascinated by the swimming pool and I was engrossed with the Never-Ending Story and this fabulous food that we had, you know. Madiba became the secondary sort of feature of the day, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we get too much into the discussion, what's everybody reading at the moment?
I'm still reading Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. Mm-hmm. So I'm still going through that. Obviously, whoever hasn't listened to the Roundhouse episode that we put out a few weeks back, it's just a story about a lawyer who works with, African-American lawyer who works with people on death row. And he has written an amazing account of his career and his life. And he's just basically talking about the system in the States and how a lot of the people that are on death row and the death penalty, how unconstitutional it is, and trying to work with a lot of these largely innocent black men who are on death row. And he basically spoke a lot about that. Mm. It's an amazing book so far. I'm halfway through. It's a very intense read. And it also chronicles his life, like as a young lawyer, like going from his background and then going to uni and then getting internships and then changing his course of direction when it came to law and whatnot. It's a very enlightening and awe-inspiring book.
Interesting. Cool.
Definitely.
Well, I've just started reading a book called The Seven Deaths of Emily Hardcastle.
Okay.
And I have no idea what it's about. I've read like 10 pages and I'm so lost. But apparently you're lost for the first 200 pages and then you're kind of like, oh, it starts to make sense, but then apparently it trips you up again.
Toni Morrison.
Not really Toni Morrison, but I think it's a mystery novel, but I know there's elements of time travel in it and I think it's like a Groundhog Day thing where living the same day over and over again sort of thing. But it's got great reviews. The cover looks amazing as well. That's why I bought it. The cover just looks incredible. Fantastic. So yeah, that's what I'm reading at the moment.
Okay.
What about you, Ndaba? What are you reading?
Well, I just finished the Frantz Fanon book. We all know Frantz Fanon, right?
Yes, yep. We do.
Obviously, that was quite intense.
Which book?
Black Face, White Masks.
Yeah.
Good read. Mm. But yeah, I mean, there's a Frenchman being translated into English. So yeah. It's not the easiest of reads.
Yeah,
but
it's quite complex.
The ideologies and how he breaks down the white capital system and the fight with the, you know, black emancipation and... Mm-hmm. He's really articulate and quite a brilliant mind.
Yeah.
But now I'm here in London and I went to the Penguin Random House and I picked up the Wiley book.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Esky Boy.
Which is Esky Boy, which is on his autobiography. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to getting into that.
Yeah. Ah, okay. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. Right. Derek, do you have a gem this week?
I actually do have a gem this week. Mm. And it's a short story that I actually forgot about. And it's funny because when I started reading this, then... It kind of reminded me of the books and short stories I used to read. So I went back and read. It's called Gentleman of the Jungle. It's a short story by Jomo Kenyatta. And it's basically like a little parable of colonizing somewhere and literally taking land and trying to justify it. So it's about animals, though. He's talking about animals. But the way he does it is amazing. It's really, really good. I don't want to give anything away. It's a very short read as well. But that's my gem. Gentleman of the Jungle by Jomo Kenyatta.
Okay. Right, so let's get back into the discussion about going to the mountain. Derek, do you have any...
Yeah, I just wanted to start off and ask about the pressure you must have felt trying to condense life lessons from Nelson Mandela into a book. Like, I mean, how did you...
Can you imagine?
How do you do that? How did you choose what to include?
Well, it was a process. It took me about 2 years.
How long?
2 years.
Two, okay.
Going back and forth, of course, with my agent and, trying to come up with a nice, juicy story for you. So, yeah, I mean, I just chose sort of the most important lessons that he taught me. And, you know, he once told me when we were having dinner, he said, Ndaba, you're my grandson. Therefore, people will look at you as a leader. Therefore, you must get the best marks in class. And I was like, whoa, granddad, that's a lot of pressure now. You know, I just wanted to be a normal kid.
Yeah.
I just wanted to fit in and not stick out and not have people whispering, hey, that's Nelson Mandela's grandson, you know, which is what happened very often at school. You know, whenever we'd play against other schools or those new students and new teachers, etc. And, you know, what sticks out is the lessons he taught me about leadership. You know, that leadership is not about being the best. It's not about being number one. It's not about having the most. It's about service. It's about the service that you give to the people that are less privileged or underprivileged than yourself, the people who do not have a voice, the people who cannot act for themselves. That is what true leadership is about. And of course, when we think about Nelson Mandela, he's one of the most revered and loved leaders. So those are the kinds of things that stick out. You know, he taught me that a leader has to be humble. You know, he said to me, Ndaba, you must not drive a Jaguar because then people will know you have money.
Ooh, yeah.
And I was like, but granddad, you used to drive a Mercedes Benz.
And what did he say to that?
No, I didn't say that. Oh. It wasn't a line. I'll let that one slide, granddad.
Smart.
You know? So humility, very important as a leader. Integrity, very important. You know, when you say, hey, brother, I'll meet you at the library at 2 o'clock, be there at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
When you say, I will submit this report, you know, end of the week by close of business on Friday, make sure you do that. Mm-hmm. You know, that is integrity.
Yeah.
It's not really that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you really build your reputation, your name, and you garner respect. And, those are the kinds of things that Madiba taught me. One more very important thing that I learned from Madiba is that, you know, Madiba had incredible compassion for people. And he treated everybody with the same respect. You can imagine, Michael Jackson had come to our house for our grandfather's birthday twice, in fact. George Bush, Lennox Lewis, a whole array of big, huge, famous people, right? Important people in the world.
Yeah.
But my grandfather treated those people the very same way he treated Mama Tolly, who cooked for us, Albert, who cleaned the garden, Bro Mike, who was the driver.
Yeah.
You understand? Because what I understand is that not only could Madiba connect with any human being from 0 years to whatever year, right? He understood that we each have the potential to achieve greatness, regardless of your race, your sex, your demographic, or your history.
That's fantastic.
So how heavy did the, obviously, your surname weigh on you? Do you feel like it's kind of fast-tracked you a little bit onto the path of greatness?
Well, yes. I mean, if in all honesty, you know, the love and respect that Madiba has carried throughout the world, it's very easy for me to open any door, really, you know. Mandela's grandson. Okay, let's hear him out. Let's give an opportunity.
Yeah, at least get into the
room. You know, so I can open up literally any door. Mm. But when I come, I better come correct.
Mm.
Because in life, you really only have one chance.
Yeah.
You know, you always have to put your best foot forward. And as a Madiba, whatever you come with has to be tip-top.
Yeah.
It can't be substandard or anything. It has to be the best. You know, that's the kind of pressure that we have. And people, of course, expect us to walk in the footsteps of Nelson Mandela. Mm. And nobody can really fill those footsteps. Those are footsteps of a giant.
Mm.
But I say, I walk in the light of Nelson Mandela. I carry the values of Nelson Mandela, you know, which is some of the things that I've shared. Humility, integrity, discipline, you know, have conviction and deep passion for the cause that you're with. Because if, as a young person, you don't have passion for what you're doing or the cause that you are, you know, pushing forward, you'll easily give up. You need to surround yourself with people that believe in you, good mentors, people that can guide you, people that believe in you.
So I was going to say that because a lot of grandparents, they tend to have a lot of proverbs that come with them. I deeply miss my granddad every day, but like I always remember the little things, patient man rides donkey, all these different things, like where there's water, there's life. I mean, that was so random, just because he was sitting in the living room, he always had a pint of water next to him. And I was like to him, why do you have that? Are you drinking that? And why do you have this water? And he would always be like, you know, where there's water, there's life. And then that would literally be the end of his thing. But then when he died, there was no longer that pint of water. Do you see what I mean? And it was really, really, really impactful when I started going through the grieving process. Like, what was that process like for you? Like, what proverbs do you remember from him?
I mean, my grandfather, I don't remember any proverbs that he told us, to be honest with you. But he told a lot of stories, you know, about his childhood growing up, you know, the things he enjoyed doing. And he told us the story of this gentleman. He was a warrior from the hunter-gatherers, the Khoisan tribe. So basically he was telling us that from the first time that the whites started to settle in South Africa, there was resistance because there was just clash over cattle, over farming, over the land. And there was the one battle that took place at the edge of a cliff. And, of course, the Bushmen were fighting with their bows and arrows, and the Dutch people had their guns, and eventually they had cornered the Khoisan people up against the cliff, basically. And so most of them were dying, and there was only one, the general, was left. And basically, you know, they saw that even though all his men had died, he continued fighting. And so they raised the white flag, you know, to say, okay, you know, let's stop fighting, come over, you know, we want to say congratulations. And the man didn't adhere to that. He basically shot his last arrow and he jumped over the cliff. And my grandfather was saying to me, how can you, after a great battle, seeing all your men being killed, go and surrender yourself to the enemy? You know, so I would rather be a dead man than be a man incarcerated by my enemy.
Mm. Yeah. That's interesting, because in the first chapter of the book, you talk about the power of forgiveness over the power of violence and how some people would call that foolishness. Do you think that is foolishness in any way, shape or form, to believe that the power of forgiveness is what will take us forward rather than physical resistance?
Well, of course, everything has a time and place, is what I believe in. When we look at Nelson Mandela himself, he was a man that resorted to violence. I don't know if you remember, but Nelson Mandela was the first commander-in-chief of the military arm of the ANC. He trained himself 6 months in Algeria, 6 months in Ethiopia, because they felt that their continued marches of peace and protest were not making any strides. They were not getting any progress.
No.
The enemy was not listening. And there was an interview, a really powerful interview, where he said that there is a new thought within the ANC, that our continued peaceful marches are only met with brutality and savage attacks on an unarmed people. Now is the time for us to take arms and hit back at the enemy. And that's exactly what they did. But unlike the enemy, they didn't attack people. They attacked the infrastructure of the apartheid government. So they bombed the power stations. They bombed the telephone lines and the telephone infrastructure and post office and things like that. But of course, there'll always be casualties of war. And he went to jail. And, you know, after 27 years of jail, having witnessed what was happening in Africa, you know, because a lot of the time when the African countries became independent, they were marred by civil war. And so he saw this. And I think, you know, after experiencing so much violence and obviously hearing the news, they would smuggle in newspapers. I think he just wanted to end the violence because it was a cycle of brutal violence that was never ending. And I think he basically made a decision to come out and say peace. Let us end this violence, you know, otherwise it will never end. So he was peaceful and he was violent, you know. Yeah. It's really all about your strategy and what is your end goal.
They kind of work hand in hand, really, don't they?
Peace and violence?
Yeah.
Without one, you don't have the other.
You can't have.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's.
You see, I mean, some people use violence to get peace. Some people
they do, and I think you're right. I think violence has its place. You know, at the end of the day, like I think it was Assata Shakur who said, "No people have achieved peace or basically freedom by appealing to the moral aspect of their oppressor." So if you're trying to march and say, look how you're treating us, look all of these things, it's kind of futile because they know they're doing it. So, yeah, I'm kind of the mind that sometimes violence is the only way to solve a problem, especially if you're being violently oppressed.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
That's true. But I think peace is ultimately what we want, ultimately what we're striving for, because there's not much progress that happens during the time of violence. We look at the Congo right now. You know, there's been civil war that's been happening in the north of Congo since it's the longest war known to man that's been happening, still going on. And that is because the Western world want to make sure that these people are in this consistent state of violence and war and deprivation so that they can continue reaping those resources for next to nothing. You know, most of the coltan, Congo has 80% of the world's coltan, which you use in your smartphone, in your smart TVs, in most of the technological devices that you use. So for them, it's in their best interest to make sure that the civil war continues, so they're mining all these resources for free, essentially.
I hear that, actually.
That's some bullshit.
Yeah.
That right there, bullshit. I'm tired.
So then, talking about forgiveness then, you know, there's obviously making peace, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you've forgiven.
Trying to say we should forgive the colonizer.
I mean, this is what I want to ask. Do you feel like you have made peace with what the situation was in South Africa and you've also forgiven the people who perpetrated those violent acts and enacted apartheid?
I believe that we need to forgive the colonizer.
Oh, God.
I believe that if we do not forgive the colonizer, we will forever be trapped in this.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
spirit of hatred and hostility when we need to be focusing on building our people. Mm. Let us leave the colonizer, because we have dealt with him for decades. For hundreds of years we've been dealing with the colonizer. We know what he's about. Mm. We know how he thinks. So we need to now focus on our own people, because we are still at the bottom of the food chain, guys. We are still at the bottom of the pyramid. So let us leave him, because we know we've been dealing with him for 400 years, right? Slavery to apartheid to post-colonial slavery, which is happening today, that we see every day. We need to focus on making sure our people are not consumed by the hyper-capitalism and the hyper-consumerism that the world is run by today. You know, we need to make sure that our young people are not so focused on how many likes, how many followers, how many bottles of champagne I can pop, right? We need to say, guys, the true value of a man is if you are find yourself in a privileged position, whether you're a musician, an artist, a sports star, a prominent politician, your job is to make sure you uplift as many people out of poverty as possible. Mm. So that we can say, Derek, how many people did you lift out of poverty? 100. Well, guess what? I did 200. That's what makes me a better man.
Yeah, you understand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are the values that we should be aspiring to. That's how we should be competing amongst each other as black people.
Mm. Okay, I just want to quickly move on to... to the alchemist.
Yeah, I was gonna mention this.
You know, obviously, you know, you mentioned it in the book, and we've had many discussions about the alchemist on the show.
Okay,
I read it in university, and when I read it, I was a huge fan. But then, as the years have gone on, I've become very critical,
quite cynical of it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, what is it about the alchemist that you think resonates with so many people? Because I know this book has sold tens of millions of copies.
You know, I read it when I was in high school. And obviously, I was somewhat of a troubled youth, a rebel without a cause, you know, just trying to have fun all the time and not trying to hear about discipline and taking care and, you know, watch your friends and all these things. Yeah. I just wanted to have fun.
No one has time for that.
That's and, the life, though.
Yeah. Obviously, until things hit rock bottom, then you're like, okay, maybe I need to reflect a little bit.
All right. Yeah.
And what I enjoyed about The Alchemist is that, you know, like he went on this journey. And each time he reached a block, you know, there would be this voice, right, that would come and talk to him and make, or it would come in his dream. And it would make him realize that, listen, you're not going to go anywhere by playing and being a victim. You need to take charge. Stop. And a lot of the time, we as black people are playing into this whole victim mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to be able to take charge and realize that ultimately we have the power. The destiny is in our control, not the other person. You understand what I'm saying?
It's about realizing that, though.
It's about realizing that. We cannot continue to be victims, brother. That is one of the key lessons I learned from The Alchemist, you know? Yeah, man. I read it a long time ago, so I haven't been back to be able to see it from a point of view, because I was in high school now.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be things that I'll see now that I didn't realize before.
Yeah. You read it once?
I just read it once,
So in terms of, like, you know, the victim mentality... At what point can you say that someone has that mentality? So, for example, us examining the past and critiquing colonialism, slavery, and all of that kind of thing, it's been a long process. And I think it's probably been this long because our colonizers and the people who enslaved us have refused to engage with it, with us.
Yes.
So there hasn't been, like, a conclusion. Do you know what I mean? So if we're doing that, because a lot of people do say, oh, if you keep talking about these things, why are you acting like a victim? But then would you classify those people as... having a victim mentality because they keep on rehashing the same things?
No, there's nothing wrong with, you know, acknowledging the past and talking about the past, analyzing and critiquing it. But what is the end goal? Where are you trying to go with this conversation? Let us not just criticize and point fingers for the sake of pointing fingers, for the sake of, you know, saying, hey, you are bad. Don't act like you are better than me. You're not better than me. You are involved in, you know, oppressing people, etc. For me, it's about, okay, guys, we understand what we've been dealing with for the past 500 years. Where are we going? Where do we want to take our people in the next 50 years, in the next 100 years? Because the same colonizer has planned 100 years ahead. We have not. So he's still ahead of us.
Mm.
So that's why we need to focus on our own progress. You understand what I'm saying? We need to focus on our own progress, guys. Mm. For me, the greatest crime that ever happened was slavery, right? And the wealth... and the billions of pounds and dollars and francs that it had created because some of these very wealthy institutions that you find here in England, across America and Europe, have been built on slave money. We should be coming together and say, what? We want reparations. Mm-hmm. Do we want reparations?
Hell yes.
We want reparations. They need to pay back for the land that they have stolen. Mm-hmm. They worked our grandfather's backs to the point where there was nothing on the bone, right? It was just nothing but just skin and bone, right? And I have come to the conclusion to say our reparations to be as such is that because of the amount of money and time and Lord knows what else they took away from us, our dignity, etc. I believe our reparations should not be us getting money. But I believe that no black child should ever pay for education. That's how they should pay back for what they've done to us. Because, like Madiba said, education is the most powerful weapon we can use to change our world. So these institutions, the corporates, the governments, need to come together and make sure black people should not pay for education. That is reparations for me.
Yeah.
That's fair. That sounds fair to me.
I always struggle with this, obviously. It becomes a sense of pan-Africanism, doesn't it? Because I'm just like, well, do individual black nations have to focus on their nations and then come together as a wider African diaspora?
It's possible to do both.
You think so?
Yes.
I think it's possible to focus on yourself and focus on the bigger picture. In essence, I still am a pan-African. But when I was really into it, you know, I was kind of like going through this, how can I call this?
It's a phase.
This black power phase, And one of the arguments that a lot of black people I'd speak to is that black people, Africans are not a monolith. We have our own countries. And I feel like that, throwing that argument at a pan-African is really unthought through. Because, like I'm saying, you can do both. You can focus on your country and you can focus on pan-Africanism and bringing things together. You know, Kwame Nkrumah did it. He was focused in Ghana. But at the same time, he was thinking, how can we unify Africa? Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. It's very important. You know, when you look at Africa today, you will see that there are two main influences as far as youth pop culture and influence in general is concerned. South Africa and Nigeria, the two biggest economies. And when you look at, for example, Trace Top 10 Africa playlist, five of the songs are from South Africa, five of the songs are from Nigeria. And our cultures are mixing very well. But where we find issues is our governments are not coming together. I believe that if these two leaders were to truly unite on every department, on every level, we will start to see the unification of Africa, and that will start the process of Africa coming together, building our unity, reigniting the solidarity that we had, and moving towards a road that will finally give us true independence and prosperity.
Yeah.
Just going back to The Alchemist, and you know, you talk about the idea of a legend, and you know, basically your destiny or your goal, your purpose, and so on and so forth. And you know, you mentioned that, you know, when your mother died of complications because of HIV, you felt like your legend had changed. It had taken a different shape. What was that process like? Did you feel the change happening, or was it, did you just decide, okay, this is what I need to do with my life now?
No, it was a gradual process, because I was very angry for a long time, you know, because the stigma attached to HIV/AIDS was very real, and it was really ravishing our country. It's the first time any disease had come with the moral compass, you know, because HIV/AIDS, how you contract it is through sex. So you have been engaging in immoral behavior. You have been doing dirty things. You're promiscuous. You know, all these attachments that come with it. And so people were literally dying in shame, dying in silence by themselves. And, you know, I found out about that my mother had HIV/AIDS probably 6 weeks to a month before she died. It was really at the last moments. And then my father died after that, 2 years later. And, you know, I'll never forget that meeting we had the next day after he died. We came together as a family to discuss what we would tell the world as to how our father had died. And my one aunt, or cousin actually, she said, well, HIV/AIDS doesn't kill you. It kills your immune system, so you're unable to defend yourself against common illness like pneumonia, bronchitis, etc. So that's what we can say. And my grandfather said, no, We shall not do that. We shall simply say, my son was taken by HIV/AIDS. Full stop. That's it. Do not mention anything else about related cause of death and other illness. No, HIV/AIDS. And really, that was a breaking point, a turning point in South Africa, because it was the first time a prominent family had disclosed the cause of death. You know, and just purely saying HIV/AIDS and not mentioning any other related illnesses. And I think that gave a lot of people courage, and it became a catalyst in us dealing with HIV/AIDS on an open table. You know, to say, you know, in the statement on that day, he said that we need to fight HIV/AIDS like cancer, like hepatitis, like any other disease that has been on this earth, and not really put so much focus on this moral compass, you know. Yeah. It's ridiculous. I have a lot of theories about HIV/AIDS, but I'll share them another day.
Yeah. Well, off the back of that then, I have two questions. So what is the state of the stigma now in South Africa? And also I want to ask, do you feel like the progress that your grandfather made in terms of people recognizing HIV and tackling it like just a disease was taken backwards by Mbeki and his policies towards HIV and AIDS?
Yeah, I mean, we've gone through a lot in terms of from Madiba to Mbeki and to now. But I can say currently the stigma is almost gone. It's almost disappeared because people, even in the villages, talk about HIV/AIDS very openly. You know, I have one of my cousins in the village in Kono who's actually got HIV/AIDS, and they talk about it like it's any other disease. So I'm very happy to have reached that stage. But of course, when Madiba did it, it was actually in 2005. So Mbeki had already, we had already passed the Mbeki era, because Mbeki came in 1999 and he did his 10 years. So it was after his, he had already accepted by the stage that there was a link between HIV and AIDS, basically. But yes, I mean, obviously during that time, there was the TRC, there was Zaki Ibrahim, there was Nkosi Johnson. You know, majority of the society had been moving in one sort of direction to say there is a related, they are a cause, HIV causes AIDS. So by that time, Mbeki had to accept it.
There was
nothing he could do. But I think a lot of people feel that because of that stance and, you know, because we didn't allow the antiretroviral medicine to come in, a lot of lives could have been saved.
Yes.
That's the one thing that's kind of a dark cloud over Thabo Mbeki. But I must say that Thabo Mbeki actually led South Africa through the most economic growth we have seen in history of South Africa. So he was really a good president for the large, you know, the 80-20 rule. 80-20 rule. He gave us the 80%, so we're happy about that. And right now, you know, our I think in, I saw a statistic recently for colleges, it's down to 13%, you know, where it used to be 29%. You know, it used to be 1 in 4, which is crazy, you know. So we are doing well, but now where it's picked up is in the younger generation. The 16 to 21-year-old sort of segment of the population, it's rising again. It has just peaked again. So we need to consistently remind our people that HIV/AIDS is not gone. A lot of people think that we've won the fight against HIV/AIDS. It doesn't exist anymore. You know, and it's ridiculous. You know, people need to continue testing themselves from now and again and make sure that they use a condom every time they engage in sex. And if you don't want to use a condom, make sure you know your status.
Absolutely.
I wanted to actually ask if we could move on to Mostly Flicks very quickly. What were your thoughts on Black Panther?
Oh, I loved it, to be honest. You know, they're using my language in the movie. And that was an amazing surprise for me because I had no idea. The official language of Wakanda is Xhosa, which is my native language. So that was really amazing. And for my kids to also see that, it makes them proud and maybe will sort of motivate them to learn the language, because currently my kids can only speak English.
Oh, right.
You know, it's very difficult teaching them. Also, my the mother is Pedi, so she speaks another language altogether.
Okay.
And so I made sure that I try, at least the nanny's Xhosa, so she speaks for them in Xhosa. But, you know, everything, movies, music, TV, school, everybody's in class, and I'm traveling a lot. That's what I do most of the time, you know, speaking at colleges, promoting, you know, our Africa Rising sort of ethos, etc. So it's very difficult to get them to speak closer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was very critical of Black Panther when I saw it initially, and I did come across one thing, a statement. I think somebody tweeted, somebody did like a long thread of tweets, and he finished it by saying that no one can explain to me why the hero of Black Panther is a white CIA agent flying to stop a black uprising. Do you know what I mean? And I just thought to myself,
But, I mean, that was a decision that was taken by the king of Wakanda, Black Panther himself.
Yeah.
He's the one that said, you go and stop these people, because the way they are doing it is not the right way. You cannot just go there and arm people who are not educated, because that's what's happening in America right now.
Yeah.
America, you're going to just breed violence begets violence, and you're going to breed a nation of psychos, because America's filled with them. People that walk into the cinema and just open fire. You know? Mm. That is the one nation that has the most amount of psychos. Do we want to create a nation of psychos, of black psychos?
Yeah.
No. So I don't agree with that view.
You don't agree
at all? I don't agree with that view.
See, that's what I do.
That operative came from the king of Wakanda to go and stop them.
But I think it's the imagery. It's what, you know, it's what the movie kind of puts out into the ethos.
No, but he was under the directive. He was under the mandate of the king. Mm. He was not acting on his own. He was not the hero of CIA. The hero is the king of Wakanda.
But it's still it was still in his best interest, though, wasn't it? To stop a black uprising in America.
I mean, like I said, it would have not been the right uprising to arm uneducated people. It would have backfired on us.
Because I was completely against Killmonger, and I was just thinking,
I wasn't completely against Killmonger. I think he conflicted, you know, that whole anti-hero sort of thing.
Anti-hero?
Yeah, he was kind of an anti-hero.
But you can't lead with anger.
That was my one issue.
You cannot lead with anger, brother.
Yeah.
You cannot. It will be detrimental to your conclusion, to your end goal.
I just found it how interesting. I mean, as much as it's been oversaid and overdone, it's the first time you've seen an African country that what the possibilities of what it could have possibly ever looked like had it not been colonized. And that was hopeful, a weird kind of hope, like it's not probably might not happen because obviously nearly every country in Africa is colonized, but then you've got just the fact that it's there and the fact that it was conceptualized kind of just made it was that element of hope kind of thing.
Interesting. Okay, I have one more question for you. So what do you feel about the fact that Wakanda was thriving and allowed colonialism, slavery, to happen while it was thriving and didn't share any of its technological advancements with their neighbours?
Well, of course, you know, when you're going through great challenges, sometimes you have to make a sacrifice. It's like Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro is a little island fighting against this huge nation of America. He had to take certain measures that were not necessarily in the interest of his people, which seemed to be taking away their liberties. So they couldn't have cell phones, the media was controlled, things of that nature, right? But if you think about the amount of times the America tried to assassinate Fidel Castro, over 400 times. There's a museum in Cuba. I've never been, but I've been told there's a museum in Cuba that shows that the American government tried to assassinate more than 400 times.
Really?
More than 400 times. Can you believe that? Right? He had to take certain hardcore measures that people will not necessarily like for the interest, for the protection of his country, of their culture, of the heritage, of the history, of the knowledge that the lineage has produced over those years. And then figure a way out how you're then going to do it. Don't just do it for the sake of doing it. You must have a strategy. That's what we forget sometimes. You know, we get excited, and then you just blurt things out. And then, you know, that white man is going to hear you, and then he's going to go with his own strategy and make sure that he's the one who benefits more than you. You understand? Mm-hmm. And we don't want that. Like right now, for example, there's huge development taking place on the continent of Africa. But who are the people that are actually making those developments? It's Chinese companies. It's European companies. So who are the people who are going to benefit at the end of the day? It's not going to be Africans themselves. It's going to be multinational corporations. Mm. So we have to be able to always say, guys, what is the best strategy to make sure that Africans are the ones that benefit from the development that's taking place on the ground? Mm. So let's not be too quick to get out there. You know, sometimes we need to take a step back, you know, in order to take 5 steps forward.
Good answer.
And just to say about Wakanda, the most important thing that Black Panther did, guys, is to give young black children that sense of instilled pride and confidence in being a black person. You understand? I saw a video of a Chinese kid crying to his mother, saying he wants to be black like Black Panther. And the mother was trying to tell him that, no, you are Chinese. And the kid was like, no, I want to be black. I want to be African. You know what I mean? How amazing is that? How amazing is that?
Well, guys, the companies are there, so you know? I'm sure we'll be able to go soon.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You got anything that you want to
know? No, so yeah, let's just wind down. Where can people find you? If they want to reach out to you, if they want to look up what you're doing.
Sure. On Instagram, it's Ndaba_Mandela.
Okay.
On Twitter, it's Ndaba Mandela, one word. And for our foundation, the Africa Rising Foundation, it's Africa Rising Org, one word, both on Instagram and on Twitter.
Okay.
Awesome. Amazing. Don't forget, you can catch us on Twitter at Mostly Lit, Instagram at Mostly Lit Pod, and email mostlylit@gmail.com.
Guys, we're here every Monday. Catch us next week.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Salute, brothers.
Bye. Thank you. I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
Mostly Lit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.